Hello, this is Jeff Vanderstelt, Executive Director of Saturate and the host of the Saturate podcast. Saturate exists to serve and equip leaders to start and strengthen unified gospel city movements that lead to gospel saturation, to the end that every woman, man, and child has repeated opportunities to meet Jesus through his church on mission everywhere and every day. We believe this will require, as Jesus prayed in John 17, that the church is unified in a region and collaborating around five key initiatives: citywide prayer, disciple-making strategies, leader health, serving the city together, and starting new churches and new kingdom initiatives. Now, presently, we're in the middle of a series called 180, A Return to Disciple-Making. And it's based upon this book that I wrote for Exponential 2024. Dave Ferguson, back in the spring of 2023, asked if I could speak into the direction of the conference that would happen in 2024. Man, I was humbled and honored and privileged to be a part of that. And as I spoke into it, he eventually asked if I just put it into a book. So we did. By the way, it's a free book if you want it in e-form. You can just go to exponential.org and look up 180, A Return to Disciple Making. You can just download it for free if you want, or you can, if you like a paperback version, you can go to Amazon and purchase one there. But in it, we walk through five key shifts that we need to make in order to return to disciple making. We've already addressed the first one, which was we need to make a shift from reaching people to actually making disciples, which requires that we have a definition of a disciple and a clear pathway for making disciples. And then we just started the second shift, which is the shift from informing to equipping, that we aren't here just to give people information, but we want to holistically equip them to become disciples who make disciples, and disciples that truly look like Jesus. And so the last episode, we talked about the fact that in order to do that, we need a full-orbed approach to equipping based on Ephesians 4 that equips them from the apostolic, prophetic, evangelist, shepherd, and teacher callings that look like Jesus, that he's all five of that, and that we in the church have been given as gifts to equip one another so that we're getting a full expression of Jesus in our equipping forms and strategies. Now I want to talk a little bit about the actual process of equipping. And if you've listened to the previous episodes, these build upon each other. So I'm not going to repeat everything, but I want you to take what you've already heard and begin to apply it to this equipping paradigm that I'm going to share with you. Now, I've seen it happen over and over again. Leaders realize they're not actually making disciples. They realize they're not truly equipping people to become disciple-making disciples. And often what happens is they just figure, well, we just got to give them new information. We got to have them read a book, or we got to do a preaching series, or maybe a training curriculum. And those are all good things and important things, but keep in mind that's probably coming from one particular perspective of the fivefold, which is probably the teacher type. It also isn't really how you equip. It might be how you inform, which is a portion of equipping, but it's not sufficient in and of itself. New information is not going to do it. If that were the case, we would be done, because we've got more information than we've ever had in the history of humanity. We have more access to information than we've ever had. And that itself will never be enough to equip people. It's much more holistic. It's much more in depth than that. In fact, I would say it's deeper than just informing. And that word deeper is the acronym I want to use to walk through how do we do a better job of truly equipping people in a much deeper way. And we're going to look at how Jesus did this, because this isn't new. It is what he did with his disciples. But I think we need to recapture it, and that we need to reformat our present training vehicles or experiences into much more deeper equipping experiences. First of all, when we look at Jesus, he demonstrated, that's the D and deeper, he demonstrated everything he called his disciples to do. He demonstrated it so they could see it. They could watch Jesus cast out demons. They could watch Jesus pray. They could watch Jesus remove himself from the crowds and get into solitary places. I mean, everything that Jesus called them into, they could actually look at and see that he did it in front of them. And so early on, when I planted Soma years ago, back in 2003, 2004, we wanted to make sure that whatever we're going to train our core group into, they could see us do. And so that meant they would watch us pray. They'd watch us prayer walk. They'd watch me share my faith. They'd watch Janie and I open our home and exercise hospitality. They'd watch us serve our neighbors. They even watched us at times when we had to deal with demonic oppression in people. I mean, they watched us pray for healing. Like, they could see whatever it was that we were equipping them to do. And so that's the first thing. We're demonstrating it. Second, we want to have them experience it. So that we demonstrate it so they can see it. We have them experience it so they can feel it, or they can taste it. They can have an experience of the thing that we want them to eventually go do themselves. Jesus did this regularly, whether it was him sending the disciples out in the crowd to feed the crowd and watching him multiply the food in their very midst, or when it was on they were in the boat in the storm and he calmed the storms while they were there. Sometimes it was even him rebuking them or correcting them so they would know what that felt like when they were going to have to do it with others. But Jesus regularly would pull them into the context of experiential learning. I mean, Peter walks on water. You know, what more experiential learning can you have of the power Jesus has over all things than that? And so this is experiential nature to their training. An example of that would be even him washing their feet. He doesn't just demonstrate it. He does it to them. And then he says, now I've set an example that you should now go and do likewise to others. And so this can take on a lot of forms. I remember one time when I was training a group of guys in how to listen to God in prayer and Bible reading, I encouraged them all to get a journal. We several times a week showed up early in a particular place. We take time to read the Bible out loud, ask them to listen to what the Spirit was saying, to write down whatever it was they heard. And then we took time to test that. Does it line up with God's word? Could we affirm this is in line with the Spirit of Christ? And so they experientially learned how to listen to God. I didn't just give them a book. I didn't just give them an informational training. We actually did it in such a way they could experience it happen to them. So they would learn that way. So demonstrate it so they can see it, experience it so they can feel it. The next E is explain it so they hear it or they understand it. And this is what we most often think of as equipping. It's when we're going to unpack what the scriptures say about the idea. We're going to kind of explain how something works. You know, when I learned how to golf, I had to have someone tell me the mechanics of golf and how the swing works and when it works well and when it doesn't work well. And so there is an informational piece to our training. In fact, Jesus, when he teaches them how to pray, says, pray like this, our Father who's in heaven, hallowed be your name, your kingdom come. And he goes on and continues to give them a framework for prayer. And so there is this idea of explaining how to pray. You might remember when Jesus has to explain how to cast out demons because they just got stuck in that area. So he teaches them how to pray, teaches them how to cast out demons, and he does give information. He does explain concepts and principles to them, and we need to do that without a doubt. In fact, if we don't do this, we might find ourselves not training in a gospel-centered, biblically informed way. So we've got to make sure we don't lose this as we do more demonstrative and experiential training. But if all we do is that, it will certainly not be enough. In fact, I would say for many of us, we need to do a lot more of the other. In fact, most people will tell you that when people only hear an idea, they only grasp a very small percentage of the learning they need to be able to go live that idea out. It's probably the least effective of training that exists, though it's still necessary. So ask yourself, are we then explaining everything we want them to know? Do they see it? Do they experience it? Have we explained it? And you might already see that this isn't always going to be in this order. It's not as linear as I'm, you know, describing right now, because sometimes we explain it, then they go see it, or they explain it, then they experience it. Sometimes they experience it, then we explain what happened, then we go demonstrate it again. So it can take on a variety of order, but nonetheless, we want to ask, is it at least these three? And then 4, we want to make sure they practice it so that they can learn how to do it themselves. If you're into golf, golf instructor Hank Haney recommended that you have a minimum of 100 golf swings a day in order to become a good golfer. So there's a reason why I'm not that good of a golfer. But what is he saying? He's saying practice makes perfect. And most of us know that in order to become good at anything, we have to do it a lot. And we might wonder why a lot of people are not very equipped in, for instance, sharing their faith. And we should ask ourselves, how often have we had them practice sharing their story and proclaiming the good news of the gospel to many different issues in life? We should not be surprised if they're not effective at it just because they sat and listened to us tell them how to do it once or twice. So they've got to practice it, and they've got to practice it often. Jesus sent his disciples out in pairs. They came back. They reflected on it. He trained them. They go back out into other places and try things again. And this was an ongoing practice of learning that they engaged in. At the end, I'm going to share with you maybe how you can put it all together. But I will say this. I think a lot of us, this is true of me and true of the last church that I stepped into, we make an assumption that most people have had somebody practice with them the things that we expect them to do. And I found in my last post, the last church that I served in, a lot of people heard about prayer, heard about Bible reading, heard about sharing their faith, but they didn't get enough reps with somebody watching them, giving them feedback, helping them improve to actually become really proficient at it to the degree in which they could train somebody else to do the very same things that they were supposed to be trained in themselves. And so in particular, in our context, when I was at Doxa Church, we realized that a lot of our people had not been effectively developed in the basic spiritual practices. We were calling them to go and do the work of Jesus in everyday life, but they hadn't been taught how to abide well in Jesus. So they didn't have the power to do it. They didn't have the right motivation to do it. And so we realized we've got to really step back and reconsider how the church was equipped in the spiritual practices. Many of you are listening to John Mark Comer or other people talk about that, because I think at large, the church as a whole has not been developed well in them. I think we've been told to do it, but I don't know that anybody's demonstrated it for us, explained it well, given us experiences, and then helped us practice over and over and over again until we become proficient at the skill or ability that we want to grow in. And so we basically dedicated 3 years to help Doxa members grow in the spiritual practices. And we basically picked one practice a quarter. We didn't try to do too much. So I think the first practice was silence and solitude. We did some teaching on it up front, so we informed them. We gave them some illustrations, so we demonstrated it. We actually gave them some practical tools to practice it. I think we gave them at least 5 different ways they could begin to practice silence and solitude. We had them process it in their groups, whether it was a mission community or their triads, their DNA groups, where they would process through both what is it, how did it go when I tried it, reflection on how they could grow more in it. And we had them work on one for 3 months before we introduced a second one. And we took 3 years to do that. So you can do the math. At the end, there was about 12 different spiritual practices that we helped them grow in. And not only did we demonstrate, explain, have them experience it, but we had them practice it. And that leads to the next letter in the acronym DEEPER. That's what exposed what was going on. We demonstrate so they can see it, experience it so they can feel it, explain it so they can hear it, practice so they can do it, and then expose so that what's inside is revealed. See, it's when we do these regular experiences of training through demonstration, experience, explanation, and practice that what's inside of us gets revealed. Our fears, our insecurities, our doubts, our poor theology, our inabilities, and really good training does really good exposure. I was a soccer coach for many, many years, and one of the things I would often do was do drills that would force my players to use both feet, and I was trying to expose their weak foot. And once we expose their weak foot, then we redesign particular drills for their development on their weak foot. The exposure was meant to show us where we needed to do more training. You know, Jesus does the same kind of thing. You know, he exposes the fact that the disciples don't care for little children, and he has to teach them about the how the kingdom of God is for such like little children. Or when he's in the Garden of Gethsemane, they fall asleep, and then he says, you know, your spirit might be willing, but your flesh is weak. And it begins to reveal what's going on in their heart. In fact, we know one of the disciples cuts off one of the leader of the high priest who's coming to arrest Jesus, and Jesus heals his ear, and it reveals his heart. In fact, you know that Peter says, I'll never leave you, Jesus. If I'll fall away, I certainly won't. And Jesus says, yeah, but you're going to deny me three times. And then what happens is Peter denies him three times before Jesus is crucified. And Peter's heart is revealed. And Jesus doesn't shame him for it, but now Peter knows here's what's going on inside of his own heart, which still needs to be addressed and developed. And we want to create equipping opportunities and experiences that expose our hearts, expose our head, you know, what we do know and don't know, expose our skill level, what we can and cannot do. And so we want to make sure whatever we do creates the opportunity for exposure to happen. And then lastly, we want to make sure there's time created for reflection to happen. We want to give people the opportunity to reflect on what it was that they discovered in the training process. You know, what went well? What didn't go so well? What would I do differently? We even let them give us feedback. What would have been more helpful in this training for you? What would you encourage us to reconsider or do differently in how we equipped you in this particular skill or ability? So we want to create space for reflection. And it's in the reflection that they discover more and more about themselves, what they need to do differently, what they might need more help with. But we also discover how we can strengthen our equipping processes so they become more and more effective. I remember in particular this exposure and reflection piece coming together around one of the missional communities that I was coaching several years ago. They had been a missional community that was working in particular with the boating community. So they spent a lot of time out on the water, and we had helped them think through some different ways in which they could engage some of their friends more missionally. And one of the things they wanted to do was do a Super Bowl party, invite all their friends to it. And after it was done, we asked them to do some reflection, what went well, what didn't go well. Because by the way, that the event itself is training. I want you to hear that, that a lot of times the training itself, the event we do or the ministry we engage in is the training, the best training environment there is. So side note, don't miss out on the fact that if you have things that are going on Sunday, those ministry teams are not just teams to do ministry, but they're environments for equipping ministers in a more deeper way. And so this particular event became that for the group. And you know, I said, how'd it go? And one group said, man, it was awesome. It went so well. We debated everybody that wasn't a Christian, and we showed them how wrong they were. And the other group said, yeah, that's why it didn't go so well. We thought it was a terrible event because now our friends don't want to come back anymore. And the event itself became a training environment that exposed, I think, a very broken way about which we go about evangelism and missional living. And that is that we think the goal is to be right. Not the goal is to build relationship, to build relational bridges of trust by which we can then build onto those relational bridges the truths of the gospel over time. And they had misunderstood the goal. The goal was not to prove how right we were and how wrong everybody else was. The goal was to build relationship. The goal was to get to know people's story. The goal was find ways to serve. The goal was to find places of agreement, because it was at the places of agreement that we could build off from towards the truths of Jesus. So, and for instance, some good friends of ours, one of the first places of agreement was they could finally agree that if there was a God, that God must be love. And from that point on, we could build the rest. And so that group had to learn that particular skill and several other skills like hospitality, how to listen, how to walk in humility, how to be patient, how to wait on the Spirit to create the open doors instead of us trying to force the door open by kicking it down. A whole bunch of exposure happened, but it was in the reflection time that the exposure was able to be identified. And so again, these aren't always going to happen in linear form. Sometime one of the aspects of this equipping process is going to lead us to the other aspect. And it becomes cyclical, and also it goes back on itself. So even in that particular instance, once we realized that, then we realized, oh, there's some more explaining we need to do. There's some more experiences you need to have. There's some more practices you need to engage in. And it opened up a whole new opportunity for more training to happen as a result of that exposure through reflection. So we demonstrate it so they can see it. They experience it so they can taste it or feel it. We explain it so they can hear it and understand it. They practice it so they can do it. We then take time to make sure it exposes what they don't know, what they do know, what's going on inside of them. That's what the whole idea of exposure is getting what's inside out. And oftentimes that will happen through our reflection process time. And then we want to have, I would add two more R's. I know it's getting a little bit of a long acronym now, but I would add two more R's. Have them repeat the process until they can reproduce it in the life of somebody else. When they can do that, we've effectively fulfilled the equipping process around that particular aspect of their development for disciple-making disciples. Now, let me give you one example of how we did this. Maybe you could take this and try it yourself. One of the things that we train people in is how to tell their story, making Jesus the hero. And we have that, again, at on our site at saturatetheworld.com. You can look it up. It's available. I think we have it both in video form as well as PDF form. But we basically train them how to tell the story, making Jesus the hero, which I won't train you how to do now. You can look at that later. But before I do it, I let them know they're all going to tell their story. And we put them into triad groups, which we call DNA groups. And I let them know over the next 4 weeks, you're going to hear me do it. And the next 3 weeks after that, you're each going to share your own story with Jesus as the hero. So as soon as you tell people they're going to do something, they listen very differently. And that'd be one thing I'd say is that you want to tell them you're expecting them to do the thing you're training them in, and that they're going to do it in a way that you're going to get to watch and see and give feedback, and they're going to get to reflect on. So we told them that up front. And then I said, we're going to start by me teaching you how to do it. So we didn't start with demonstration. We started with explanation. So I explained it. This is how you tell your story, making Jesus the hero. And then I said, we're going to do a fishbowl experience. I'm going to do it in front of you and let other people now reflect with me about my story, like we're going to want to have you do over the next 3 weeks. So I set the timer for 15 minutes because that's what we were going to do with each one of them. I told my story with Jesus as my hero. We do it through a formative creation, fall, redemption, new creation. We use those kind of four pillars as a way to frame up a story. So I explained it, then I demonstrate it. They experience me telling them my story. And then we took time to have people reflect with me, ask questions about my story, ask areas where I still struggle to believe the gospel, areas where I'm still struggling to redeem my story. So we did some reflection, which exposed me. And, you know, I got to show up honestly. In fact, I had people come to me and say, I've never heard a lead pastor be that vulnerable with their own story. It was so good. We feel like we know you better. And so they experienced what we had hoped they would experience, what they're going to go do now the next 3 weeks. And they got to reflect. They got to give me feedback. They got to give me ways in which they thought I could do it better. I got to ask them questions about what they saw, what they discovered. And so the whole process happened. And then the next week, they now do their story with their triad. So one person sharing, the other two are doing the reflection and exposure with them. So now those other two got to experience it a second time, and the other person got to practice it. And then the next week, another person does it. So now it's a third time experiencing it, and they do it again, and it's a fourth time experiencing it. And then they all got to keep practicing the reflection and exposure process. So by the time we've done that over 4 weeks, people got pretty good at it. Now, we knew that wasn't enough, but that was a good start. And that was much more deeper training than most of them have ever received in their life, especially around sharing their own story or sharing their faith. Now, one of the things we started to do in that context is we just said, we want to make sure anything that we're training is deeper. And so we basically used that template and put it up next to any training experience we created and said, was this a deeper training? And what could we do to make it better? What could we do to make it more holistic? And I'd love for you to do the same thing. I'd love for you to look at your present training and ask yourself, what about the deeper process are you missing? Maybe you've mainly been informing people. Maybe there's some new ways you can develop and create more holistic formation equipping in your own context. I encourage you to take one skill or one practice you want your people to be developed in, use the deeper framework, and build out a deeper training experience, and then definitely create space for feedback so you can find out how you can make it better. I promise you, if you'll begin to apply this to all the different things you want your people to grow up in, you're going to experience a much more holistic disciple-making equipping process that's going to lead people to actually be able to reproduce the very things that you would hope that they would be able to do with every single disciple that is made in your context. Thanks for being with us. If you would like more, I encourage you to go to saturatetheworld.com, become a member. It's the same cost of a Netflix subscription, and in so doing, it enables us to give a free membership to people around the world that can't afford it. It gives you access to all of our videos, all of our online training, PDFs. There's just a ton of great stuff to serve you in your journey to become a disciple who makes disciples and form ministries and churches that become disciple-making ministries that form disciple-making disciples. Also, if you'd love to support what we do, part of the way that we're supported is through people funding us, like the subscription-based services or training or coaching that we provide, which I'd love to invite you into if you want more, but also through giving. So if you'd want to support our work, go to saturatetheworld.com, click on give, and you can support our work. If you are a part of a ministry and you would like to see more holistic development of a disciple-making pathway in your context, we offer the Disciple-Making Lab. It's a one-year process by which we can help you redesign your entire strategy of disciple making in your context. If you're interested in that, just go to saturatetheworld.com. You'll find under our resources and training that you can get more and more information about that. We'd love to take you on that journey and help you grow and develop your own disciple making strategy to become more and more effective. So it's making disciples who make disciples in the everyday stuff of life.